Welcome back to the Putnam Proud Podcast. This is the conclusion of our talk with Kamario Twilley about working in Dubai and now shifting to Japan. So much to learn. Thanks for listening. Enjoy.
You are listening to Putnam Proud, a podcast about the Putnam County Charter School System in Edenton, Georgia. Our shows will highlight the school system, families, teachers, staff, and the community.
What a neat sort of lesson, experience, I guess, my point.
It was eye-opening. I'll never forget, I put my hand out to one of the moms, maybe my first week there. She said, "No, mister, no, put your hand down." She said, "I can't shake your hand." I took offense at first. But after talking to people, they were like, "No, it's a cultural thing, you know, because you're not part of her family and you're a male. You're not allowed to touch her. And she's not allowed to touch you. But the dads will come in because you guys are males. He can touch you and you can touch him. You embrace. But you're not allowed to touch her. And she's not allowed to touch you."
So did you have a Lamborghini, a school-issued Maserati Lamborghini?
I drove a Nissan Micron, which is about the size of a Fiat.
Nice.
So you did have a car over there.
I had a car.
Did you have to go through any kind of regulations for a driver's license, or did your
U.S. driver's license.
Okay.
I paid for them to translate it into Arabic. I took an eye test and... as we say, finished. Kalas, we were finished, and I was on the road in 2 hours.
So do they drive on the right side of the road or the left side of the road?
Right side of the road.
Okay, so that was familiar.
One of the very few countries that was under British rule that actually drives on the right side. Most drive on the left. If you were under British rule, you drive on the left side.
Mm-hmm. So. Wow, that's cool, though. That would make it a lot easier, though, to pick that up instead of crazy.
And everything's in English. Like, you had Arabic, and then you had English. So it was it wasn't that bad.
That's cool.
You can get around. And there's only three major roads. We called it 311 or Sheikh Zayed Road, which is kind of like the downtown connector. It ran from Ras Al Khaimah, the north of the country, all the way to Abu Dhabi, all the way to Saudi. So you just jump on that highway, take you wherever you want to go.
Gotcha.
So let me make sure that I'm clear about this. You said a country of 10 million people, 1 million emirates, so 9 million, I think you called them expats. Or from, but only 200,000 from the United States.
About 200,000.
But every sign was in English.
It's in English.
That's interesting.
So they view English as the language of business.
Okay.
And for them to be able to, so there was a school in Syria, medical school, that was actually all in Arabic. The issue they started having, they graduated these doctors and they're leaving and they don't know English. They couldn't practice once they left. So the UAE saw what was going on in Saudi and opted to do English. So the kids learn English also. So everything's in English and Arabic.
Interesting. Now, you had told me earlier that the school week is a little different. Is that right?
Yes. The best part of working there. So when I first got there, we used to go to school on Sunday through Thursday, which was kind of an adjustment for me. So I used to get off work I would get home about 3:30. So we were 8 hours ahead. That was on a Sunday. I would turn on TV, watch Sunday service on TV because it was Sunday. So that's how it first started out. Then my second year, the country decided, nope, we're going to a Monday through Friday, and Fridays are half a day for the entire country. Schools, you do as you please. We literally worked from 7:45 to about 11. So the kids came in half a day. Basically, it was like a first day of school. Feed them and get them home. Nice. That was every Friday. Just get them here, feed them for snack time, because we didn't even do lunch. We did a snack and get them home.
So basically, you've got almost a 3-day weekend, 2.5-day weekend every weekend. Does that lend itself to travel?
Yes. Actually, one of the emirates, which is roughly translates to a state that was below us, was called Sharjah, and they only worked Monday through Thursday. So each emirate has their own ruler. So the ruler of the emirates that I lived in was part of the Ras Al Khaimah family. The ruler in charge was part of the Maktoum family. And he decided, no need for half a day. That's a waste of time. So we just go, everything will be open from Monday to Thursday. But it does. It opens itself up to travel, just rest. Like sometimes you just need to, I remember going home and just sleeping sometimes in the afternoon. I didn't even have to do anything. Just go home and sleep. And at night I would go out. But to get off at 11, walk across the street.
Because that's where your compound was right across the street from the school.
5 minutes, you're at home. I lay down, take a nap, maybe wake up at 4 or 5 and go out for dinner and go to the beach. But just to rest, it was that work-life balance. Or as my boss used to say, it shouldn't be work-life balance because work is not more important than life. So it should be life then work balance. But
So let me make sure. I thought I heard you say this, but it really didn't register at first. The entire country shuts down Friday at lunchtime.
So Fridays are called to prayer. So most of our kids, when they come into school, they're dressed in their local attire because after school, they're going to the mosque. I actually went to one of the mosques. One of the kids invited me, so I went. And I mean, like, the country, everyone's at mosque during prayer time. Like, there's this thing, like, a lot of Americans, when they're at mosque, we go shopping because the malls are empty, the grocery stores are empty, there's no traffic. But once prayer's over, and on Friday nights, it's family time. So the malls are overrunning till 2 o'clock in the morning. Stores are overrunning with shoppers. Restaurants are open at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Kids are out at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. But that's their time. They're very nocturnal people. But they go to prayer. After prayer, go home and rest up a little bit. When the sun starts to set, because it's really hot. After the sun sets, they're out. And they're having family time during that time.
So I got to ask this. You mentioned that you had a boss.
Yes.
So can you talk about that relationship just a little bit about what you did and how that worked in the school?
I had actually, so my first year I had a local MRIT as a boss. Because of COVID, there was a lot of shifting around. There was a learning curve. I remember coming home that first Christmas and I remember talking to Dr. Aker. I was thinking about coming home. I was just like, I don't know if I can do this. And I remember him asking me, like, what part of it that you can't do? Like, is it that you can't do it or you just don't want to learn how to do it? I'm like, but it's different. And he's like, yeah, it's different. Everything is different. But, like, what can't you do? I want to hear that part of it. And I just remember it was just so, the culture difference was so different. There's this saying they say, inshallah, which means God's will, God's time, God's favor. So in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, we need to look over the pacing guides and we need to order materials for KG or for secondary for second semester. We need to do that before we leave. Inshallah. And I'm just like, no, it's not inshallah. We really need to sit down and have a discussion. Habibi, which means my love, my dear. He would say, Habibi, come out of here. Inshallah, no need. I'm just like, oh, goodness, we are going to sink. And like, you know, I laugh now, but at that moment, I'm just like, everything is inshallah. And then we get to a meeting, it's like, Habibi, did you get that done? But you told me inshallah. So it was like, it was kind of frustrating, but it's a very cultural, like work doesn't take over their life. It's a very relaxed, very calm, very, sometimes very frustrating to me. But I remember coming home talking to Dr. Aker. I remember talking to Dr. Rogers about, like, I don't know if I can do this. I think I want to come back. And I remember complaining to everyone. And the only person I really wanted to say, oh, you can come home, was my dad. I think anyone could say anything. My dad said, oh, you can come home. But I'll never forget, I was explaining it to my dad. And he was taking me back to the airport. And I was like, I know when we get to the airport, he's going to say, you know, if you want to stay, there's no need for you to go back. You know, it's not a problem. He said, I'll never forget, he took my bags out. I said, well, Dad, you know how, this is really crazy. He said, son, inshallah, it'll be fine. So that cultural difference, it took me a while to get used to it. And once I got back and I just let go and just went with the flow, life became so much easier. And inshallah, got you out of a lot of trouble. I remember getting a car from Central. Mr. Camario, you didn't do that. Inshallah, hopefully I'll have it done. Alhamdulillah. Okay, we'll call you back a little bit later. But nice, that was just how things went. But then I had a I had an Australian boss, and he was very, I need this, this. And I enjoyed that structure, but I did kind of miss the inshallah.
Nice. All right, so I'm going to shift gears here for just a second, because the reason why we're talking to you in person, which is cool, is that you're kind of in a rest stop on your way to a whole nother world.
Yes.
And so tell us a little bit about, you've made a shift, you've left the UAE, and you've come back to the U.S. We're in Georgia, and now you're on your way to Japan.
Yes, I've been given an opportunity to head to Japan, so I've taken it. The UAE was a great place. Let me start with that. I will say probably some of my best years were in the UAE. There was even with COVID going on, it was amazing. Beautiful people, beautiful culture. I learned a lot about education. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about the business side of education that I don't think I would have ever learned. But this opportunity came up with Department of Defense Educational Activity. So basically military schools for military children. So I've decided to head east to the rising sun. We'll see how that goes.
So what was the term? Shallah?
Inshallah means in God's will, God's term, in God's time, or God's favor. So a lot of the kids would tell me a lot. So did you do your homework? Inshallah. No. Or I remember a little boy in KG told me, Mister, because I had gotten to the point where they would ask me stuff like, Mister, are you buying us new iPads? And I would just say, Inshallah, just for them to leave me alone. And he said, tomorrow, yesterday, the day before, it's Inshallah, Inshallah, Inshallah. Why not today? Why not right now? I'm like, I don't know. That's how they say, I don't know. So a lot of parents say Inshallah to the kids. It's actually no, but they don't tell them no. They just say, oh, it's God's will, God's time. We'll see.
So do you think that Japan's culture is going to be Inshallah?
I think it's going to be a lot more structured. And to be honest, I thrive and I enjoy structure. Being part of a military family, to me, life is a lot easier with structure. Like I said, I love the UAE. And I love saying Inshallah, but I do feel as though I do thrive more with a more structured environment than sometimes Inshallah.
So what part of Japan are you going to be living?
So I'll start off in Tokyo, but I'm going to end up in Okinawa, which is an island that is the furthest from Tokyo. We're about an hour flight from Taiwan, about a 2-hour flight from Korea, South Korea, and about an hour and a half from Hong Kong. So should give me some opportunities to kind of see these countries around me also.
Cool. So what will be your job there specifically? Will you be an administrator or teacher?
I'll be an administrator, but I'll be an academic coach, focusing just on technology. So I'll be going in showing teachers how to use technology in the classroom. But initially, I got a phone call that I'll probably be in the classroom. I told him as long as it's kindergarten, I'm up for it.
Nice. And you said this, but just to reiterate it, these are children that are, their parents are there with the military.
Yes, they're...
Or Department of Defense.
Their parents are on duty, and they're there with their parents. So a different type of student. I remember having a discussion with... Because we saw a lot of wild behaviors in the UAE. The kids were kids. But I remember growing up in military schools, we really didn't misbehave because we were part of military schools, our parents were very much made aware of misbehavior. So it's going to be even a different type of population. So it should be a very easygoing crew, Inshallah, I hope. Nice.
So, all right, so let's talk a little bit about what's something that you really hope to be able to do when you go to Japan? Because now that you had this experience of living in another culture for a little bit, there's got to be something that's got to get you thinking about maybe some experiences that maybe you hadn't thought about before you went to the UAE, but now you might be thinking about.
I think I'm really looking forward to the bullet train. Even as a child, I loved a train. When we were in Europe, I love a train. Visiting cities like Barcelona, where you can get on the subway and go everywhere you want to go. I just love a train, but I just want to experience going 200 miles an hour on a train.
Love it. That's awesome. That's very cool.
So do you think chicken nuggets and french fries in Japan? What are we expecting? You migrated from chicken nuggets and french fries to adapt to the UAE and now Japan.
Sushi, I think it's going to have sushi. So, we'll see. We'll give it a try, but I'm going to stick with my chicken nuggets and fries just to be safe.
Nice. Good stuff. So, well, this is, you know, these are cool experiences. Now, you've written an article, and you're going to rewrite another article. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that initial article that you wrote?
I wrote a series of articles. So it's entitled, I Traded My Cow for a Camel. That first article was about my first 24 to 36 hours in the UAE, just the culture shock, the fear, the midst of COVID, coming to grip with my biases of a part of the world that I think is so misunderstood and we're so fearful of, but it's so inviting, so beautiful. I mean, when I say some of the most beautiful and kindest people you will ever meet in your life, I remember walking down the street during Ramadan, which is the holy month. Did the last call of prayer. I'm just walking through the neighborhood and the family, come eat with us. We're about to break fast, come. I don't know who they are, but I ate with them. Very inviting people. The second article was about finding my tribe. As Mr. Arena said, very important as our kids leave Putnam and they go, as Mr. Arena said, UGA, Atlanta, or even further, that they find their tribe. Who's going to support them and make them the best version of who they are. That is so important. I tell anyone that's going to the UAE to teach, to be an administrator, beautiful country, but it can be lonely if you don't know who your tribe is. It gets lonely in the desert if you don't have a tribe to say, oh, let's go bowling, or let's go to the beach, or let's go to brunch, or just let's go do something. All the money that you make there doesn't mean anything if you don't know who your tribe is or have a tribe to fall back on, because you're going to need them. End of the day. So who your tribe is, being a Christian in a majority Muslim country. that was a difficult period for me. You have a lot of questioning about your faith. You kind of wonder sometimes if I was a male born as an Emirati, would I still be a Christian or would I practice Islam? So that article goes through those feelings and those emotions. But one thing about the UAE, I will say, is very tolerant when it comes to religious practices. There's a, I don't know if anyone's ever heard of the Abrams Accord. It's a treaty where Saudi and the UAE are trying to normalize ties with Israel. And the U.S. is at the forefront of it. There's a place in the UAE called the Abrams Accord where there's a mosque, there's a church, and there's a synagogue, all on the same campus. So if you go on Friday, you may see Friday prayer at the mosque and at the synagogue, Sunday church services going on, all on that same campus, to show that all of those religions came from Abraham. So that was one of those articles. How did I reconcile that? Like, where do I even stand now when it comes to my religion? The next article was about leaving. Like, one of the hardest decisions was, is it time to go? But sometimes you know when it's time to go, and it was time for me to make an exit. So those articles kind of give you a glimpse to what I saw and how I felt being there.
That's awesome. You know, it's, and I'm expecting there's going to be some new articles as you experience whatever's waiting on you in this new world in Japan. Because not only just time alone is what amazes me here. Because you know, in Georgia, we're in the Eastern time zone. So you go how many hours forward to go to the UAE?
8 hours.
8 hours. So now you've come backwards. 8 hours, and then you're getting ready to go, what, like 15, 19?
13 hours.
13 hours, all right. So, nice, all right. So, you may need a couple days there to recover a little bit. Talk a little bit about your hopes and thoughts, just about these experience, what you're looking for.
I as I've gotten older, because I'll be honest, at first, my primary focus was to make as much money as quick as possible so that I can live a soft, easy life. One thing the UAE has taught me is the most important currency is not a monetary currency, but a currency of experiences and the currency of your time. And what are you doing with those experiences and what are you doing with that time? My hope is just to live a full life. When the sun is setting on my life, I want to be able to say, I've done everything I wanted to do. I was in the UAE, I rode camels. I jumped out of a plane. I was in Zanzibar in Africa swimming with dolphins. I was in South Africa on Tabletop Mountain. Those are the experiences or the currency that has the most value. So that's where I'm at in life, like enjoying life to the fullest, but also showing kids here in Putnam County, you can do the same thing that I'm doing, and I'm not that special. I am not that special. And you can do the same thing that I'm doing. That's my main goal, is to let them see it's great, but I want you to think further. I want you to be a global citizen. I want you to be a global thinker. I want you to be a global consumer and a global producer. So I want you to look at things on a global level. And if we can shift their mindset to that global thinking, it will pay dividends to Putnam also, because I think a lot of our kids, particularly being in the classroom, I remember going to Atlanta, and when they used to see the skyscraper, like, some of them were so in awe. And even though Atlanta's only 72 miles up the road, some of them don't leave the confines of Putnam County. Some may go into Lake Country, but some don't go any further than that. And I think that's really important for them to know. What I'm doing is not all that special. To me, it's not. And it's attainable, and I want you to attain it.
That's awesome. You know, it's funny because I've traveled a lot of different places, not many other countries, though. I'm about to date myself here, but in the 80s, so I've made some friends in Australia in the last bunch of years, primarily thanks to this podcast, you know, to doing podcasting. And it's really cool. So at some point when I got to know them and we were talking and all this sort of stuff, I said, I got to tell you something. I said, okay. I need to let you know that in the 80s, when I'm in college, I said, so a lot, you know, Australia was a neat place that I'd love to go to one day, but I got to tell you that what really is on my mind is, you know, I said, I'm not going to imitate the accent, but I have, if you know this line, that's not a knife, this is a knife, all right? And that's from, oh, you don't know it, oh, this is killing me. But the point.
Steve, that's from Crocodile Dundee, yes, sir, go ahead.
Thank you, yes, somebody here knows it, yes. And I said, so a lot of my cultural information I got about Australia was from Crocodile Dundee or from AC/DC or Midnight Oil, some bands that were big at the time, or who could forget Men at Work telling us about a Vegemite sandwich, right? And my point is that my cultural experience was coming from my music or studies and things like this. You know, one of the things that's cool is that you kind of have a message thinking about there's you know, kids thinking about becoming teachers. There's a teacher shortage, and it's kind of across the world. And your experience of being able to go places, so it's not just influenced by movies and just the music or whatever. Can you talk to that just a little bit, that idea of the teacher shortage and the experiences that it might help them as they think about becoming a teacher?
So I think COVID kind of saved me from being one of those teacher casualties. Yes, there's a teacher shortage everywhere. We were dealing with the issue of trying to find qualified teachers to come to the UAE to teach. Mr. Arena and I had this discussion is that sometimes we may have to appeal to their self-interest. I think a lot of times we look at teaching it's not even looked at a profession, and that's internationally. Because even in the UAE, there's a stigma that we are babysitters for rich kids, particularly at my school that we're at. But we have to, I think, just appeal to their self-interest. Think about it. If you tell a student that's coming out of college that has student loan debt, all right, I'm going to give you a job for $45,000 a year. they're going to say, how am I supposed to make that work? Or you tell them, you know, why don't you go overseas a couple of years? They may pay you $50,000 a year tax-free, free housing, all your accommodations. That helps you pay down your debt, save some money. Then you come back and share those experiences with your students. That approach is beneficial for everyone. You have a teacher that has gotten world experience, have built connections, those experiences. But they also, they come back, they're more inept to share those experiences with their students. For me, I was in that burnout phase when COVID started. But I think going to the UAE has kind of helped me to recommit to education, because there was as my old boss said, it's not work-life, but it's more of a life-work balance for me. There was more of a, I was able to travel. I was able to go to Africa, go to some of these places like Georgia. When people hear Georgia, oh, Atlanta, no. Now I'm talking about the country Georgia, or to go to Jerusalem, or go to Oman, or go to Saudi, and go to some of these places that I would have never gone to. But it also, I understood that education gave me the opportunity to do those things. So it kind of made me recommit to the profession a little bit. I think that's how we need to start approaching it. But yes, like you said, there's a teacher shortage everywhere. And that's the thing that I fear the most is if we don't have teachers, who's gonna educate them?
That's a big question. It's a really good question and a big question. And that's the type of experiences that you're having only pay off. The more worldly you become to be able to talk with kids and share and explain, you know, it's just kind of an amazing sort of possibility there. But yeah, we do. Everybody needs the teachers. And
I'll give you an example. August Little. I know you remember August Little and Robert Thomas.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Arena came to my class. My first year, and I'll never forget. You probably don't forget either. You remember when you came and you sat on the little step. You read a book. So one of my students gets up. His name is August. He goes to the back. He's doing math. He's a really, really bright child. So we used to have this system in the classroom. If you're bored, please don't interrupt me. Just there's something you can do at the dry erase board. Just go do it. So it was usually math problems. And I remember Mr. Arena's in reading, and I'm thinking, I hope he doesn't get up. He gets up. He goes back, and he's doing math. And I remember Robert raises his hand. You say, yes, Mr. Thomas. This story is boring. Do you remember? This story is really, really boring. And I remember you later on in the day, we were at the assembly, and you said, I enjoy coming to read to your classes. Mr. Twilley, I won't be back ever again to your class. This is your class again. But August, I saw August since I've been here. And August actually wants to become a teacher. And his mom had sent me this long post about the reason he wants to become a teacher is because of Mr. Twilley. I'm going to be honest. Pre-UAE, I would have probably told him, no. But now, I actively encourage that, and I'm being genuine with that encouragement. Before, I don't know if I would have encouraged that. But now I can say, yeah. Like, I saw him, like, 2 weeks ago, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I was like, yeah, like, you would enjoy traveling and seeing other things. Because I think his mom was actually in India for a little while, and she came back. But it made a difference on her career. Like, she has, that's her reference point. She can reference to that. Well, I went to India, I did this. And I think that's important, that you have those people that have seen things, that done it, just not talked about what you want to do. They went and did it and came back and can kind of guide you how to do it.
So your first class are now in ninth grade. You realize that?
They're in ninth grade.
They're in high school now.
Yes.
So think about your journey from starting with them in kindergarten, and now they've migrated, matriculated to high school. You have gone from cows to camels. And the next series of stories, what's your title? What do you want to say?
I will be trading in my Kandora for a Komoto.
So think about, you know, as they, some of the greatest change occurs from 5 years old to 15 years old. But then you are going through this metamorphosis from your first year of teaching to through COVID to being energized in our profession. So would you recommend that maybe every teacher take a sabbatical or some kind of study abroad. And maybe that's how we keep the fire. That's how we commit to going and being someplace else. What do you think about that?
I 100% agree with that. I think sometimes as teachers, we're so caught up in theory that we lose fact of what reality looks like. So I would encourage every teacher, if possible, to take a sabbatical or to work international. Sometimes we're looking through the world through a very American-centric view, and we need to see the world from different perspectives. We need to look at different educational practices. But if we're in this bubble and we're always feeding off each other and we're always telling each other how great we are and, you know, we're doing great things, we don't really know because we've never ventured outside of that bubble to see what other people are doing. And when I say venture, I don't mean going to Atlanta. I don't mean going to South Georgia, North Carolina. I mean really see what they're doing in Denmark, which has one of the best educational systems, particularly when it comes to math. See what they're doing. We actually did a training there, which was crazy to go from a very Emirati-centric education to a European view to see how they're doing things. Just the way they set up a classroom is different. The teacher is not in the classroom with the students. Like, their desk is not there. They have their own office. Like, they come in, they teach, and they move on. The classroom is the kids' space. It's not for the adult. The adults there to teach, then they move on. Just those small little things. Even in the UAE, I know there's a separation between church and state, but the way religion is so embedded into the curriculum, and I used to tell the kids all the time, and I know I shouldn't do this, when they misbehave, and I would say in the Quran it says you treat your teachers as though you treat your father. Do you behave like this in the home? And the kids, no, mister, we don't behave like this in the home. Don't call Baba, which means dad. Don't call dad. But just to see how different people do things can open our eyes. Or even coming back here. I know now during the holy month of Ramadan, I can have children that practice Islam that maybe I shouldn't eat in front of them because that's very important for me while they're fasting. Just to have those different perspectives of the world. So, yes, if they have that opportunity, they should run into it. Run to it.
Hit first. Very good.
Well, Camario, Mr. K, this is Mr. Camario. This is so cool, and I can't wait because we got to make sure that when you come back from Japan, that you come back home, and even if it's just for a day or two, we got to do a part two to find out what's going on. This has been incredible, Mr. Rin. Any last words as we wrap up?
What nuggets? What Putnam pieces would you like to share from your first class that are now senior high school students, or to anybody that walked the same dirt that you've walked here in Putnam? What would you want to leave them with, Camario?
For my babies or for my children, they know we had a saying, if it's meant to be, it's up to me. I fully believe that if it's whatever they want to do, it's up to them. They have to commit themselves to it and just do it. It doesn't have to be perfect. Just do something. I'm looking forward to seeing them graduate in 4 years. I will be there shouting them on as they cross that stage in 4 years. Also, that class, that first year, as you know, you visited a couple times. They were a crew. But to be honest with you, I think that crew really hardened my foundation and made me the educator I was that first year, that second year, and that third year class, the class I looped with, they really made me who I am today. And even they broke me down and rebuilt me in their image. For anyone walking around Putnam or listening, first I'll go back to what Mr. Arena said at convocation. Mental health is very important. You need to make sure you are at 100% before you can give 100% to anyone. And you take the time that you need to focus on you. It kind of, when someone was telling me about it, it kind of hit because I'm not going to say I wasn't unhappy. I was in this point in my career trying to figure out what do I need to do? And I couldn't figure it out. And going to the UA forced me to do what I needed to do to get me in a better place. But for anyone else, whatever you want to do, set your mind to it, you can do it. Don't think Putnam is the end-all, be-all. There's a great big world out there beyond the U.S. And do whatever you can to get out there and see it. The best thing that parents can do for their kids is buy them a passport and let them explore the world. Let them be a global citizen.
Kamario, you will finish on this, and I typically give give one last saying, but I think what sticks in my mind for our kids is find your tribe. You know, we've often said, you know, make someplace big. If you're going to the University of Georgia or you're going to Atlanta, you know, Putnam is small anyway. But sometimes our kids struggle with going and finding and making a place small. So I would absolutely encourage from your words and one of your short stories is to find your tribe and find that group of people that you can make friends with, and those are lifelong friends that you can go and grab brunch with, or you can go bowling and those kinds of things. But it's also that support system, is that, you know, if you need help, you can get help or give help. So yeah, take care of yourself. We can't wait to hear about your journey. You know, we want to hear about the Komodo when you return. And of course, you're always welcome to come back home.
Well, thank you guys for giving me this opportunity. I look forward to coming back and sharing some more stories.
Thanks for listening to Putnam Proud. Do you know someone who hasn't listened to Putnam Proud yet? It would be awesome if you shared this show with a friend, colleague, community member, family, everyone you know. The Putnam Proud podcast is created for educational purposes. All opinions are those of guest and host. Thanks for listening.